on Sunday night, it's a pleasure to welcome to our What's On at the Movies spot, Peter Malone. Father Peter Malone, MSC priest, standing in this time for Richard Leonard, who's away doing other things around the world. But Peter Malone brings a deep well of experience. Some of you long-time Sunday night listeners may remember some of our discussions with Peter in the past. He's brought out his own memoir recently, appropriately titled An Ever-Widening Screen. Peter Malone, welcome to Sunday Night.
Thank you very much, John.
Lovely to have you with us. You get to the time of life when you've got to reflect, and your reflections are very interesting. You've phrased your memoir, or you've structured your memoir around growing up with the movies.
Yes, it's. I tried to be something of an Australian of a certain vintage, Catholic, priest, member of a religious order, teaching, but all the time the ever-widening screen, as you mentioned.
We'd love to have a discussion with this. Unfortunately, I'm only about 100 pages in, so I'm going to put aside that discussion, which we'd love to have, and pick it up at another time. Right now, I think we should pick up on one or two movies that are floating around, and everybody loves Maggie Smith, The Lady in the Van.
She's a bit the opposite of the Dowager in Downton Abbey.
Yes, but she seems to be able to adapt that persona to almost any role.
Though I must admit, she's rather curmudgeonly in both.
She pleasantly might be rich curmudgeonly, in one. Though. She has some of the best lines.
Oh, she does. John, I happened to see the play on the stage in London over a decade ago, and she was in it.
And as masterful on stage as on screen?
Yes, but it's interesting just looking how much the film has opened up, the variety of locations, her ability to move to different circumstances, the neighbours. It's the same as the play, but quite different.
Now, we should say, for those who haven't seen it, the interesting part about this is it's a play which reflects reality, and the playwright is, in fact, a player as well. Alan Bennett based this play and the film on his experience of having a lady pull up in a van outside his house and basically live there for 15 years. And he's taken his own experience with a lady in the van, turned it into a movie, well, turned it into a play first and then a movie, and he has a cameo as well.
Yes, his character is there, an inner Alan Bennett writing plays, etc., and the outer Alan Bennett, who deals with people rather timidly, in fact. But I thought Alex Jennings was very good as Alan Bennett. And a friend of mine from England, who's a bit critical of Alan Bennett, said he thought that Alex Jennings was much better than the real Alan Bennett.
A better Bennett than Bennett. The other question, of course, is does the movie serve any purpose other than an indulgence on the part of Mr. Bennett and a sort of part memoir? Does it take us anywhere?
I thought it did. One of the interesting things I thought, and I don't remember this from the play, was the two Alan Bennetts and the kind of conversation they were having, one a bit critical of the other, which I think helped the audience to have perhaps a broader view of Miss Shepherd and not be patronising towards the poor bag lady in the van in the driveway, but investigating something about her personality, not always attractive, but how do you deal with this kind of person? And Bennett gradually, I'm not sure whether he ever liked her, but gradually doing things for her.
And some of the lessons of ageing as well?
I think so. I don't remember from the past such a full backstory about Miss Shepherd, and I found that very interesting, that her ups and downs, her time as being a nun, being involved in a car accident, her manner of praying. I did like the scene where she went to confession and the priest said, "You've told me this many times before, and forgiveness is not like a bus ticket. It doesn't expire."
Ah, yes. Well, I'm getting to the stage where my memories recirculate every time I have to tell a story again. So, you know, I think, is it so much a sin or is it an inevitable consequence?
Yes, I thought Maggie Smith very good. She made it when she was 80, so it's a significant performance of somebody illustrating what someone can do in older age.
For all those who love Maggie Smith, this really is an indulgence to be coveted, isn't it? It's like sort of, you know, if you've got a sort of habit for chocolate, Maggie Smith, yes, she's there, and she is Maggie Smith in all her rich flavours.
Do you know, John, I was thinking, I took a group of school kids exactly 50 years ago to see Laurence Olivier as Othello, and I realised she was Desdemona. So she's been around for more than 50 years.
My goodness. Well, it's fabulous to have that sort of tribute to her. And if you want to get along and see Lady in the Van, it's great fun. Let's go somewhere else now. We're approaching Easter, and it's very interesting to see what's happened over recent years with what was traditionally once upon a time seen as the biblical epic, from Victor Mature and Samson and Delilah through to Charlton Heston in Ben-Hur and on to the Jesus movies such as King of Kings, all made basically out of Hollywood studios, making them bigger and better every time. Then we had the sort of Italian, let's re-look at Christianity through people like Pasolini and the Gospel According to St. Matthew and other films. Now we've reached a different stage where Hollywood is segmenting the market and saying, hang on, there's a big conservative Christian market out there. Let's make films for that market. And Sony have taken it up. Other groups have taken it up. And this Easter, this film for general release, Risen, is out of that sort of stable.
Yes, I was very surprised. I hadn't really heard anything about it till the invitation came for the press preview. And I happened to be in Sydney the week of the press preview, so I asked Sonny here in Melbourne if I could go to the preview in Sydney. And I expected it to be somewhere centrally in Sydney, but out we went to North Ryde in the Macquarie University area. And I found that the people who were at the preview were not the usual reviewers, but members of congregations from the more evangelical churches in the area, who gave it a vigorous applause, I must say, at the end.
What does this say about its virtue as a film?
Actually, I think it's well crafted. I quite enjoyed it. And then I saw that the director was Kevin Reynolds, who once upon a time worked with Kevin Costner, made Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, he made Waterworld, and more recently the Hatfields and the McCoys. So it's a person who knows how to make spectacular films rather well.
This is something that's been characteristic of this new way of approaching religious films, that is to get very good directors, very good camera people, and put together a script which is quite professional, but deliberately stays within very conventional bounds, doesn't push the envelope too far.
Where it pushed the envelope for me a little was in the character of the Roman Tribune, played by Joseph Fiennes. It's a bit the similar thing in The Robe with Richard Burton back many decades ago. Just as an aside, can I ask if you've seen Hail Caesar?
No, I haven't.
Well, Hail Caesar is the Coen brothers' tribute to and spoof of Hollywood in the 1950s, especially of Ben-Hur. And they have almost the same kind of story with George Clooney as a Roman tribune witnessing the crucifixion.
So you should see these one after the other.
Yes, I saw Risen first, so I was able to. Actually, the crucifixion scene in Hail Caesar is not bad, even though there is a jokey atmosphere at the end of it. I thought they handled it well. But there's nothing jokey about Risen. It's, I thought, very worthy, very sincere, and becomes very faith-oriented, I think, towards the end.
And isn't that ultimately the problem with these films and the general audience? That is, because they become worthy and sincere, questions that would occur to the normal man in the street audience aren't allowed to be asked in these sorts of films.
Yes, I think that's one of the difficulties of working within those conventions. I was away when the reviews came out, but a friend of mine told me yesterday they were pretty negative, although he himself, he's a Baptist minister, had enjoyed the film quite a great deal.
That really is a challenge for Christianity or for any religious tradition. At what point, in order to reach a broader audience with your message, no matter how you're presenting it, do you need to actually take into consideration the concerns and questions of that broader audience?
That's true. I thought audiences could identify in some ways with the Tribune, seeing him fighting the zealots there, and then coming to Pontius Pilate and being asked to kind of finish the crucifixion scene, which he knew nothing about. So we were looking at the familiar crucifixion from his particular angle, as well as the issue of whether Jesus was risen or not, where's the body, and also then the examination of witnesses to find out what they were believing about such a resurrection. That, I thought, was interesting.
Yes, it's a sort of, again, a trope, the who moved the stone type. Detective forensic investigation gives it a little bit of a familiarity for a modern audience.
I think that's true. And then once he has an experience of Jesus, then it moves to the explicitly faith-oriented kind of film, which may have lost a few people then.
Mm. Well, we are in a year in which, to an extraordinary extent, hyperbole and perhaps sheer faith has taken hold of the American presidential election process, what with Donald Trump's ever-onward progress. A movie just out, and it seems the timing could be seen as somewhat political, 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi, takes us back into one of the most difficult periods of Barack Obama's presidency, and one particularly focused at one step removed on Hillary Clinton. It's the story of the group in Benghazi attacked after the fall of Gaddafi in Libya and the death of America's senior diplomat. But the politics seems strangely removed from Michael Bay's film.
I thought the politics was there. One of the difficulties, of course, you've mentioned the name Michael Bay, and I think these days, seeing his name on a film, most reviewers and critics close up. They're thinking of Pearl Harbor, which they didn't like.
I think it was one of the worst movies I ever saw.
Oh, but I saw it again on television recently. I thought I'd watch it again. I didn't find it as bad as that.
Perhaps it was because it was so 1940s in its structure, yet so 1980s in its technology. I don't know.
Well, that's true. The other thing, of course, of Michael Bay, which closes even more people down, is the Transformers.
Yes.
So multiplex audiences really like the Transformers. Everybody else seems to think it's, well, they're too loud for a start. But I thought he contained himself in some ways in this film. It runs for 2.25 hours. There aren't big stars, so you're concentrating actually on the characters and the action rather than looking, say, in Pearl Harbor, you know, what's Ben Affleck doing. So here you're concentrating on the CIA, especially their security officers, coming from the US into Benghazi, the background of Gaddafi's fall, and then the militias. And I thought that was interesting, showing the different militias. You're not quite sure what they believe in, but they're certainly anti-American. And then the ambassador wanting to have some kind of goodwill and then under attack and killed, which, of course, was the question that they kept asking of Hillary Clinton afterwards. So it's very much an action film. A lot of the time is taken in going out into the city or the militias coming out to the embassy and then to the CIA compound and a siege of the compound. So plenty of action. But I found it interesting, thinking of something of the background, to see it dramatised before me.
Yes, and and if there is someone to blame in this rather than Hillary Clinton, it's the old bureaucrats who mess everything up back home.
And the ambassador himself, who I think took some risks, misjudging the feeling of the militias and thinking that perhaps he was immune as an American and finding ultimately with his death that he wasn't.
Mm. Any politics in the timing, do you think, of its release?
It came out in America at the end of last year. I'm not sure that it did particularly well. I saw it in England while I was away because it had been released here, and I'm not sure that it's done particularly well in Australia either.
Mm. Some are saying, given the background of Michael Bay that we've already acknowledged, it's probably one of his better films.
I think so. Mm. Yes.
We're running out of time, Peter Malone, but just finally, you've just had a look at Trumbo. I understand the story of Dalton Trumbo, the American author, and of course one of those noted for being on the Hollywood blacklist back during the McCarthy era, the House of Un-American Activities.
Yes, it brings it very much alive, I found. I'd seen a documentary a couple of years ago simply called Trumbo, which I would recommend. I found it fascinating. But here it is dramatised, and it ranges from 1947, with the beginning of the House Un-American Activities hearings, and finishes with Trumbo actually able to make a comeback with his name as the writer of Spartacus. Kirk Douglas did that. And more importantly, perhaps, the director Otto Preminger asking him to write the screenplay for Exodus and telling everyone, I'm going to put Dalton Trumbo's name on it. So it's 13 years of an extraordinary range of experience for the writer.
And the interesting story here is that Trumbo is emblematic of a number of people, perhaps one of the best known Hollywood movies of that era that came out was one of those that broke the mould of the Western, showing the Indians as the good guys. Broken Arrow with Jimmy Stewart and several other well-known actors. That too was written by somebody who had to use a false name because they'd been one of the Hollywood Ten.
Yes, that's brought very clearly to the fore in the film. He's, I suppose, the natural-born leader of a group who defy Congress. They refuse to answer, are held in contempt. 10 of them go to jail. Trumbo himself spends a year in jail in Kentucky. And then, of course, to earn a living, moves into this anonymous writing with fronts to take the credit. And one of the big moments is when his screenplay for Roman Holiday gets an Oscar for Best Screenplay.
And, of course, we have to compare this too with the George Clooney movie based around the same theme of several years ago.
Yes, what was that? Good Luck and Good Night.
Yes, the Murrow, Ed Murrow story.
Ed Murrow's story. It's a fascinating thing. It struck me as I watched it that it is a long time ago, that 1947 is almost 70 years ago. So for modern audiences, it's might seem fairly ancient history. But allowing for that, I do find it very interesting. And film buffs and film students will certainly be intrigued by it.
And a good film in its own terms?
Yes, although it's interesting that Bryan Cranston, whom I hadn't seen in Breaking Bad, he's very impressive in this, but he's not an immediately engaging character, so which is good for its honesty. So it's not, you're not, taken up in a feel-good atmosphere. You really have to work on it and think about the issues, the politics, and especially the crusader Hedda Hopper, played maliciously by Helen Mirren, who really dramatises how bad the fanaticism was, I think, at the time.
You see, Hedda Hopper could be compared to a sort of the Donald Trump of her day in some ways, in that willingness to play to the populist sentiments fairly toughly.
And threatening, you know, with her column, how many people she influenced. I'm afraid I was thinking of Donald Trump by the end of it. But just as a postscript, have you seen Grimsby?
No, I haven't.
Well, Sacha Baron Cohen, vulgar as always, right at the end, has some jokes at the expense of Donald Trump, and the audience I saw it with all cheered.
Peter Malone, that's probably a good place to end this discussion. There's much more to be said and much more to come. Thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Night.
Thanks, John.
This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio. Thank you for listening.